Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority. Woo-hoo! WFXS America. 98.7 The Fox City College.
Well, almost everything, I suppose. All right. Now, that's a little different for an intro, but what the heck? Let's do something different. Hi, friends. Scott with you for Let's Talk on a Wednesday morning, and it is a gorgeous day. Yesterday was not gorgeous. It was nice. Gorgeous today. I think tomorrow's going to be gorgeous. Friday, yeah, mostly gorgeous. Hey, get out and enjoy it today. Don't let yourself get stuck in an office, stuck in a house, stuck in a room. All right, get out and really have a good time today. You'll probably, I think, hear Joe Bastardi's weather forecast if you missed it earlier. It's great. All right, we have a terrific Wednesday. Make it terrific. There we go. And welcome to the program. Lots to do today. All right, we've got sports stuff. We've got news stuff. Yes, come on. We know you people. You love politics. Yes, you do. Come on. Our friend Dr. Michael Berkman, Penn State political science professor, is going to join me in the studio next hour. We're not going to be, not going to be going at it back and forth, but there's just obviously a lot of things going on and have been going on over the last, we'll say 3 months or so. So we're going to invite Dr. Berkman to join me again. That'll be fun. I've already warned him in advance. I've said, I definitely want to talk about, the so-called separation of powers in Washington, how it works, what it is, all right, the different, levels. You got executive, legislative, judicial, checks and balances and all that stuff, which I really do think there are a lot of people that don't quite understand how all of that works and why it was put together that way in the first place. So I warned Dr. Berkman. I said, let's talk about this, because you got this group kind of pushing, and then this group over here is pushing, and then here's a group that's kind of pushing, executive pushing, legislative pushing, judicial pushing. And, we got all the news headlines and the fighting down in D.C. What does all this mean? How does all this work? All right, so I'm looking forward to the conversation. Dr. Berkman, again, will join us at about 9 o'clock. In the meantime, we've got some open line time right here if you'd like to chime in on whatever. 814-954-7266 on a gorgeous Wednesday. It's going to get up into the 70s today. Good news, bad news. Good news is I got my lawn mowed, finally, yesterday. I was able to free up my schedule. Of course, it wasn't raining or anything. Got out there. I'm not the best lawn mower. I'm okay. My lawn tractor is a beast, and I've been beating it incessantly for, the last 8 or 9 years, thereabouts. Probably needs a checkup, the poor thing. But had a good mowing yesterday. That's the good news. The bad news is I missed the Penn State baseball game. I really wish I could have gone to the Penn State baseball game yesterday. Now, if you were listening yesterday, yours truly, right here, ring the bell. I just had this feeling. I knew the weather was going to be pretty good, and it was the last dollar dog night of the season for the Nittany Lions. And I mentioned it yesterday. I'm thinking, okay, record crowd. We're going to set records tonight. Well, that's apparently exactly what they did last night. A lot of you apparently showed up at the game. The official attendance last night, 6,106, which for a Penn State baseball game, that is phenomenal. I mean, it wasn't a sellout, but most of the seats were taken. It was really good. And yes, Dollar Dog Night. Oh, where's the Ironhead when you need him? Our friend Jeff Byers again is on vacation this week. He'll be back, he better be, on Monday morning. And he and I have done this back and forth bet, which I've won most of the time. How many dollar dogs they're going to move? Now, most of our guesses, if you've been listening, have been 7,000, 6,500, 7,500. Okay. Last night they had 6,106 people show up for the baseball game. How many dogs did they make or eat or buy or something? Well, a record. When I saw this number, now again, I was mowing lawn. I could not go to the game. So I get finished mowing before, you know, sundown and go in. Big Ten Network carried the game yesterday. And we'll have the results and numbers and stuff in our sports segment coming up next up. West Virginia, really good team this year. Penn State pulled the upset. All right, so that was cool. We'll have those details later. 6,106 people. Can you believe 12,112 hot dogs? Holy smokes, that's a lot of hot dogs. Let's see, there were five previous dollar dog nights. And I think the average, if you take those five, now the one was on a bad weather day and not that many people showed up. And I think the dollar dogs were like $2,000 dogs. Just, there weren't, the weather wasn't great. It was kind of cool and icky. This was, a couple of weeks ago, I think. So the average, I think it was around 5,500, you know, for the five games. Well, they crushed that last night. 12,112 hot dogs. Oh my gosh, that's great. We'll have more on the game with our sports segment coming up a little bit later on. Yes, it's a beautiful morning. Again, sort of a good news, bad news thing. Good news, great time to take the dog for a walk, go out for a walk, ride your bike, just get out and about and enjoy the sunshine and warmer temperatures and so on. Bad news, well, maybe it isn't bad news. Now, I live in Penns Valley, and so when I come to State College, come to the studio, I am able to see Tussey Mountain ski area from a distance. Like, I don't drive right past it, but I can see it from a distance. And yes, the snow is virtually gone. It is just, there's just a little bit at the top of, I guess, two of the runs there. Otherwise, it's green. Just a little bit. Now, I have to wonder, all right, today, tomorrow, Friday, when will that snow literally be all gone? Well, today, tomorrow, if I had to bet, and I won't, I would bet on tomorrow. I think by tomorrow night or something, poof, I think it's going to be all gone. So, Tussey, now, again, if you're familiar, free plug for them, I guess. They have lots of spring and summer activities, which is great. They're probably already making the transition. So, we'll be having fun there, this spring and summer. All right, how about some other news and notes? Well, of course, the death of the Pope is still a big headline story. If you're Catholic, if you're not Catholic, all right. His funeral, again, is going to be Saturday morning in Rome. Our time, it's 4 a.m. Saturday morning. So if you feel so inclined, you'll get up in the middle of the night to check this out. And, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the Pope passed away early Monday morning, Rome time. This is Wednesday. Have you noticed, if you follow news, and we hope you do, how many media outlets out there already are doing their, I guess, call them predictions for who the next pope is going to be? And there's rankings and ratings and all this stuff. I mean, have you seen this stuff already? Let me see. Hold on. I saved this. I've got a version here from, here it is, a version from CNN. Who will be the next pope? Here are some possible candidates. I'm thinking, oh, for goodness sakes, they haven't even had the funeral yet. Can this wait? All right, this doesn't have to be immediate, but of course, no, it does. And so, and I've seen multiple versions of this story from different media outlets, like who are the favorites to be the next pope? Now, again, Scott here, I am very Protestant, all right? I have many Catholic friends, which is great. And I know a little bit here and there, but I'm a lifelong Protestant, all right? That's it. And so I just look at this stuff with, I don't know, curiosity, like, okay, and what do we know? Well, we know it's going to be a guy, all right? We got that part down. We know it's going to be an older guy. And it's interesting, if you follow some of the headlines over the last day or two, you know, kind of this back and forth, like, well, you know, how old should the Pope be? And the basic, I guess, gist is, we can't have a younger Pope. Now, younger, I'm thinking somebody in their 50s. Well, we can't have that, because maybe that Pope would get in and they'd be Pope for the next, I don't know, 30 years, and apparently that's too long. Again, the Catholic Church is, I'm using round numbers, 1,500 years old. And I believe Pope Francis was the 266th Pope. So again, if you do some very rough math there, the tenure of a Pope on average is only 6 years over the entire stretch of the Church. Which, actually, I'm amazed by that. I didn't realize it was that short. For Pope Francis, it was, what, a dozen years, okay? And if you get a Pope who's a little too young, oh, that's not a good thing. So I'm looking at CNN's thing here. So here's a guy from Italy. He's 70 years old. Here's another guy from Italy. He's 69 years old. Here's a guy from the Philippines. That would be interesting. 67 years old. Another guy from the Philippines. 66 years old. Here's someone from Canada. 67 years old. Here's someone from Congo in Africa. 65 years old. There is somebody. This is the CNN listing now. There is someone from America here. Cardinal Joseph Tobin. The Cardinal or the Archbishop of Newark, New Jersey. Now, he's 72 years old. Here's someone else that is American, Cardinal Robert Prevost, who is 69 years old. Folks, do you see a theme here? Here's a Cardinal from Japan. I didn't even know that. All right, 66 years old. Another person from Canada, 78 years old. Here's a cardinal from Spain, 72 years old. Someone from Little Luxembourg in Europe, 66 years old. Someone from Hungary in Europe, 72 years old. So that's all of the CNN folks. Now, what do they all have in common? These guys are all roughly from like 65 to 72 years old. And apparently that must be a prerequisite of some kind. I had no idea. But I've seen a couple of stories that, yeah, can't take a guy too young. Yeah, that's not good. Can't take a guy too old. No, we don't want to go there. It's that tweener zone. 65 to 72 or so. Now, there's never been let's rephrase. There's never been a Pope from North America. Wouldn't it be interesting? I don't think there were two American guys on this CNN list. I don't think they're going to get it. I don't think they have a prayer simply because it's America. Oh, no, we can't do that. Now, there were two fellows on this list from Canada. Could we have a Canadian Pope? That would be interesting. All right. There was one Archbishop here again from Congo, Africa. Well, there's never been a black Pope. Well, that would be interesting. Now, again, as these cardinals get together, and I believe, what's the number? There's 135 of them. So the funeral is Saturday. And then I think in about maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks or so, these cardinals will all get together in Rome at the Sistine Chapel, and they will hammer it out, however they hammer it out. Will they wrestle for it or something, play checkers, whatever the ideas are to pick the next person, they'll do it. They'll literally lock them in a big room, the Sistine Chapel, and they go at it, vote, 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 until they finally, you know, make their pick. So watch out for more stories about favorites and, you know, all this sort of thing. The New York Times had a version which was just seven men that they list as contenders. Okay, so again, it's got to be a semi-old guy. All right, no offense, folks. I'm almost 62. I don't know. I say I'm old. I'm not. It's got to be a semi-old guy. Okay. I don't know. Maybe some people, I think, are really into this stuff. Now, maybe you're Catholic, and you're really into this stuff. Later on, or well, right now, 814-954-7266. Is there some guy, like, he should be the guy? I'd be curious. I don't know any of these guys. That's the guy. He should be the guy. Call in. What the heck? We did things for Dollar Dog Night and made predictions. I suppose we can make predictions on this. So, anyway, call in if you wish. All right, once again, yesterday, drove you nuts, didn't it? If you have a mutual fund, IRA, retirement account, Wall Street, whoop, 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 whoop. Well, yesterday was whoop, up it went. I mean, up it went. Isn't this insane? Again, these people are playing essentially with our money. And it's just whoop, whoop, whoop. The Dow was up over 1,000 points yesterday. Folks, that doesn't happen. Now, they've had some dives lately. Yesterday, whoop, up it went. The NASDAQ, which is very tech-heavy, went up 430 points yesterday. Woohoo! Yay! Why? Why? Well, to be brief, let's see. There were some good earnings reports yesterday from various companies who said, yeah, we actually did better than we thought. Okay, that's great. We shouldn't be surprised necessarily. And then the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, had a comment yesterday. And that's pretty much all it was. He had a comment yesterday. This, kind of trade battle between us and China, U.S. and China, is unsustainable, and that's true. He's telling the truth. You know, we can't keep hammering at each other. That doesn't serve either side. And so it is unsustainable. And so he, I guess, predicted a de-escalation imminent, in other words, sometime soon. Now, no date, not tomorrow, next week, next month, no, none of that. But the Treasury Secretary essentially said what everybody kind of knew anyway, that, you know, the U.S. and China just can't keep punching each other financially, economically. That, again, that doesn't serve either side. Really, it doesn't. So he just said, well, we can't keep doing that, obviously, and there's going to be a de-escalation. Hopefully, you know, some imminent is the word he used, sometime soon. And Wall Street here says, woo, they throw a party. In other words, common sense, they throw a party. All right. Now, have the two sides started negotiating yet? No. They're still duking it out, especially like via releases in the media. Well, we're going to do this. Well, we're going to do this. Well, we're going to do this. You know, back and forth, just goofy stuff. Oh, we're going to tariff this. We're going to tariff that. Meanwhile, we're the folks in the middle watching this like, come on, guys. Why don't you just sit down and make a deal? Now, that's easy to say, isn't it? The hard part is, again, and some of you are like, I can't believe Donald Trump. What an idiot. Why is he doing this? Again, here's why he's doing this. We have a $300 billion deficit with China every single year. Even though in China's case, there are four Chinese people for every American. In other words, they got way more consumers than we do. If anything, the deficit should be on their side, not ours. But of course, no. We take pretty much all their stuff, and they limit pretty much all of our stuff. Now, is that fair? Of course it isn't fair. But for some reason, past our so-called leaders of the past just let it go, let it go, let it go. And so we've essentially painted ourselves in a corner. And now Trump and company are trying to figure out a way to get out of the corner. Well, it's not going to be easy. You think China's going to give up the advantage they've held on us all these decades? Of course not. All right, we're going to have to find a way to force them to. And the idea is, I think, it's not to get from a $300 billion deficit maybe to a $300 billion surplus for us. No, it's to get it to zero. So it's even up. All right? In other words, real fair trade. We've allowed these folks to take advantage of us for all these years, and financially we can't afford this anymore. So how do we change it? Now, again, we could go to the Chinese. Oh, please, please, we gotta make a new deal. We're dying over here. We're in debt. Oh, it's bad. Oh, you gotta do a new deal. Come on, play nice. Look at all the things we've done for you. Look at all the business we've given you. Our factories are in your country and all the people that you have working. Come on, you've been taking advantage of us. You know that. Come on, China. Let's make a deal. Let's make a new deal. That's more fair to us. Okay? We'd be laughed out the door. So if you don't do it that way, and you're not going to stick with the status quo, which is burying us in debt, well, the only other one is you kind of punch the other guy in the nose to get their attention to say, enough. You've been taking advantage of us for too long now, and we're done with this. Yeah, we realize this is like a wrestling match. Where's my friend the Ironhead? We're going to go three rounds or three periods, and we'll see who's still standing at the end of the third period. Hopefully, both of us are still standing, but with a much better deal that serves both sides, not just one side. Now, that's not something you do in a day or a week or a month. It's going to take time, and there's going to be more accusations, there's going to be more back and forth, there's going to be more veiled threats, I mean, all this stuff. It's going to happen. Get ready. Will this be done by summer? Probably not. With China? Probably not. By fall? Maybe not. All right? We'll have to wait and see. But that's why we're going through all this stuff. But again, it's just interesting. The Treasury Secretary makes one little common sense comment yesterday, and Wall Street, whoop, party time! You know, and the rest of us are looking like, you people are a bunch of idiots. You're playing with our money, all right? You knew that this is the situation. What the heck are you doing? Whoop, 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 whoop. What are you doing? Stop that. Now, of course, Wall Street won't stop doing that because it's what they've always done. They have our money, they're going to play with it. And there's not anything we can really say about it. That's the angering part when I see all these financial stories. And there will be more. Whoop, whoop. There will be more of that. You know, it could be today, tomorrow. There'll be more of this stuff. And they're playing with our money and our retirement and our IRAs. I don't know. There's something in the middle of that that just makes me really angry as a consumer and an investor. They should not have that much clout over our money. But that's just one man's opinion. Just we'll continue to see how this goes. This is a weird situation. All right, let's take a break. We have a lot of sports to report in our next segment. We'll have some open time. Again, we'll talk politics with our friend Dr. Michael Berkman, 9 o'clock. We got a busy show. Keep on listening to Let's Talk. We'll be right back.
This WeatherBattle.com Foxcast.
Fox Forecast.
Sunshine returning today. Temperatures will get back up to 70. Clear and chillier tonight. Low temperature 35 to 40. Thursday, some sunshine and warm. The high 75. Friday will follow suit. WeatherBattle.com Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox.
Fox Sports.
Let Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox make you a winner this summer with our Summer Splash Contest with Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. This Father's Day weekend, The Fox will be giving away a spacious hot springs hot tub during a Belfont cruise at Talleyrand Park in downtown Belfont. Stop by these fine locations and get signed up to become a qualifier for the contest. PIMP, located 136 South Harrison Road in Pleasant Gap and at Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. No purchase necessary.
The 36th Annual Historic Belfont Cruise coming up Father's Day weekend, June 13th and 14th. Top-notch entertainment all weekend long. It starts out Friday night with an open cruise, a stock-up, the big car show on Saturday with over 30-plus classes of cars, trucks, and motorcycles on display. Plenty of sponsorship opportunities for you. Call 814-280-5881 or visit BelfontCruise.org. That's 814-280-5881 or BelfontCruise.org. The 36th Annual Historic Belfont Cruise, Father's Day weekend, June 13th and 14th.
15th. Get ready, Center County. Clearwater Pool and Spa is turning up the heat at this year's Bellefonte Cruise on June 13th and 14th with an incredible giveaway. We're giving one lucky winner a walk-in 735L hot tub by Hot Springs. This six-person luxury spa is designed for the ultimate relaxation experience. Featuring powerful massage jets for deep hydrotherapy, multi-zone LED lighting to set the perfect mood, energy-efficient smart jet technology to keep costs low, and of course, the trusted quality of Hot Springs Spas, the industry leader in comfort and innovation. Want to enter? Stop by Clearwater Pool and Spa in Center Hall before the event or visit our booth at the Bellefonte Cruise on June 13th and 14th to sign up. Don't miss your chance to take home this premium hot spring hot tub. Make sure to check us out online at groupclearwater.com or visit us in person at our Center Hall location where you can browse our full lineup of hot spring spas. And while you're there, be sure to ask about our Imagine Pools and our selection of fiberglass pools by Ocean Reef. Win big this summer with Clearwater Swimming Pool Company and the Bellefonte Cruise.
Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's Pittsburgh Pirates offer a mix of veteran stars.
Andrew McCormick has won it! They're going crazy! The Pirates have won this game!
And perhaps baseball's newest shining star.
The 2-2. He got him, and he's done it again. Paul Skenes finishes strong.
Every game, all season long, brings the promise of new excitement.
The Bucks walk it off in grand fashion.
Don't miss the action of Pirates baseball this season. The Buccos are back here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
Get up and get going with the Happy Valleys, 98.7 The Fox.
All right, we'll go with our normal opening music here. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Let's talk here for a Wednesday. Scott with you again, our buddy Jeff Byers. I think today's his travel day. All right, he and his family are having he sent me pictures, a terrific time on a family vacation starting at Yellowstone Park in Wyoming, which I'm jealous right off the bat. Boom. I think today's his travel day. They're going to fly to Florida. Now, he's in Florida for an event. All right, I guess in a couple of days, I think. And of course, while you're there, let's go on vacation. So there he goes. He's supposed to be back Monday morning. He owes me. So anyway, we will see if he will return. We'll see if it's Monday morning. But anyway, I'm just thinking crazy plane flights and weather and who knows. We'll take it as it comes. Again, we've got some open line time later. We're going to talk politics with Dr. Michael Berkman, Penn State, coming up at 9 o'clock. A little open line time then toward the end of the hour, next hour. Let's go to sports. Busy day yesterday. Let's start with high school action. We'll start with high school baseball yesterday. The rivals going at it, Bellefonte and Baldy Galeria. And this one goes to the Raiders yesterday. Final score 5-2. Bellefonte jumped out early to a 4-1 lead in the second inning and just kept on going. Had a couple of home runs in that game. Parker Caporel went 3-for-3 with a homer and a double. Peyton Vankas had a home run as well. Bellefonte improves their record now to 6-5 on the season. Baldy Galeria's record now falls to 3-8. Girls softball yesterday, it was Rivals Day, I guess. Bellefonte and Bald Eagle going at it again. And Bald Eagle's been struggling here in the past week, but they got a big win over their rivals yesterday. The Lady Eagles winning 5-0. Sierra Albright is back. Two-hit shutout with 12 strikeouts. Bald Eagle improves their record to 6-3. Bellefonte only their second loss of the season, and so they fall to 7-2. A couple other teams had big wins in girls softball yesterday. Penns Valley winning big at Clearfield, 11-0, a no-hitter for the Lady Rams in that game. Penns Valley scoring 4 runs. in the first and second innings, so they jumped out to a big lead and then just cruised. Penns Valley improves now to 5-3 on the season. Phillipsburg Osceola had a big win at Central, 10-0 yesterday. The Dragons only managed three hits. The Lady Mounties scoring five runs in the third inning. That was the big inning yesterday. So PO sees their softball record improve to 7-3. A lot of lacrosse action yesterday. State College in Mifflin County kind of going back and forth. State High Boys got a win down in Lewistown. Big win, 17-2 the final there. State High Girls played host to the Huskies, Mifflin County, and they won even bigger. Final score 21-2 yesterday. Belfont Girls Lacrosse played host to Danville, and the Iron Men came up with the win in that one by final score of 19-6. The expected high school schedule for today, and again, the weather's just gorgeous today. A lot of baseball today. State College will be playing host to Chambersburg this afternoon. Belfont down in Johnstown taking on Bishop McCourt. Penns Valley will be at home for baseball with Clearfield this afternoon. Some lacrosse action. The Belfont boys will take on Danville. It was the girls yesterday. The boys will be hosting today. And in girls softball, Phillipsburg won yesterday. No rest. Again, a lot of games kind of, you know, rescheduling and so on, kind of put up against each other. That happens almost every spring. PO softball today is hosting Central Cambria. All right, Penn State, mentioned that baseball game last night. Big night at Medler Field for a number of reasons. First off, Penn State got the win against 14th-ranked West Virginia last night. Final score of 3-2. For the Nittany Lions, it's their first win against a ranked opponent in nearly 2 years. So that made it a very big win for Penn State. They jumped out to an early 3-0 lead and then held on for the win. Chase Renner got the save in the ninth inning. It was a little iffy. He walks the first guy on four pitches, then a sacrifice to get that guy to second. Then Renner got a big foul ball pop fly out for the second out, and then struck out the last batter with a great final pitch to nail down the win and officially start the excitement. Again, the weather cooperated yesterday. 6,106 fans for a Penn State baseball game is tremendous. And yes, Dollar Dog Night. I can't believe this. Well, actually, no. If everybody got two hot dogs, and maybe that's what happened last night, everybody got two hot dogs, 12,112 hot dogs. Hey, folks, I called it yesterday. Record crowd, hot dogs, hello. Thank you for listening. I'll take full credit. All right, let's move on. Penn State women's lacrosse is in action today. The Big Ten tournament. Penn State taking on 9th-ranked Johns Hopkins. The Big Ten tournament this year being held in College Park, Maryland. This is a quarterfinal game, which is this afternoon. Again, Johns Hopkins, number 9. These two teams just played each other a week ago. And Penn State has got off to a slow start this year. Their online moniker has been Stick With Us, get it, lacrosse, Stick With Us, because they've been getting better and better as they go along. They lost a one-goal overtime heartbreaker to Hopkins about a week ago. And so, if you will, this is the rematch in the quarterfinals in College Park, Maryland. Come on, Penn State, let's do this. This game's at noon, by the way, at the Field Hockey and Lacrosse Complex at Maryland. Penn State is 7-8 on the season, but that's, again, a big improvement from, I'd say, a few weeks ago. Johns Hopkins is 11-4. The winner of this game today will move on to face the number 1 seed Northwestern. That game will be on Friday. Announced yesterday, Penn State women's lacrosse getting 6 All Big Ten honors. The Nittany Lions had the most first-team recognition since the 2019 season. 3 honorees, senior Ellie Holland and Lauren Saltz, and junior Erica Ho, all getting first-team nods. Redshirt freshman Lily Spilker and freshman Brooke Long were named to the all-freshman team. And senior Kate Dougherty was given a sportsmanship honor award. So congratulations to them and good luck in their game this afternoon at noon. Men's volleyball handed out some recognitions yesterday. The EIVA, five Penn State players getting recognition. Ryan Merck and Will Coons are first-teamers, EIVA. Owen Rose was a second-teamer. Gage Gabriel and Matthew Luoma were both named honorable mentions. Now, the EIVA tournament is this weekend. Starts today. Penn State is the number 3 seed. They will take on the number 6 seed, Harvard. Now, Princeton won the regular season championship, which means they get to host this thing. And so Penn State 3, Harvard 6 will play tonight at 7:30 p.m. in an opening match. Penn State beat Harvard earlier this season, I would say rather easily, 3-0. So Penn State, the decided favorite in this matchup tonight. If so, then they'll move on to the semifinal round. Let's go to Penn State men's lacrosse. Again, we've got some more honors. Jack Frakion and Hunter Aquino got Big Ten weekly awards announced yesterday by the conference. Frakion is the goaltender. He was named the specialist of the week. Aquino is a freshman. He was named the freshman of the week. Actually, for Aquino, this is the 6th time this season he's been named the freshman of the week. That's a Penn State record. Cool. Last week, Frakion had a big game against number 19 Rutgers. He had just 4 goals allowed and 13 saves, but the big thing was he scored a goal last week. Now, goalkeepers do not score goals. And if you do a little web searching, you can probably find it online. He got the ball and took a few steps and let it fly, and bam, right in Rutgers' net. And the celebration started. I mean, that's something you rarely see. In fact, a Penn State goalkeeper hasn't done this since 2008. So it's been 17 years since a goalkeeper for Penn State has scored in a game. So congratulations to both those guys. Now, the Big Ten men's lacrosse tournament, that starts this weekend. And in this particular case, Penn State has a home game. They will take on Johns Hopkins. This will be noon Saturday, Panzer Stadium. So again, the big white or the blue white football game starts at 2. The lacrosse game starts at noon. Penn State, of course, top 10. They've had a great team this year. Johns Hopkins, you never know, but they're not expected to put up much of a fight. But if you're going to the blue-white festivities on Saturday, remember the men's lacrosse game starts at noon at Panzer Stadium. All right, Major League Baseball last night. Now, again, the Pirates are on the West Coast, which means late games. But maybe this is a good thing. Pirates at the Angels last night. The Buccos winning 9-3. Where's the Iron Head when I need him? 18 hits for the Pirates last night. That's almost unheard of for this crew. Andrew McCutchen had a 3-run home run. And then 5 relievers for the Buccos pitched the last 5 innings. 0 runs, 0 hits, 7 strikeouts. And you heard it all if you stayed up late right here on 98.7 The Fox. That's a good outing for Pittsburgh. They improved to 9-15 now. Of course, game 2 tonight against the Angels. And yes, it's going to be late. Airtime tonight at 9:10 p.m. our time. First pitch will be around 9:40 or so tonight. Yeah, that means it's going to go past midnight. What do you say? The Phillies and Mets going at it again last night, and it was the Mets winning again. This time, final score 5-1. New York scoring 3 runs in the 7th inning to open up that lead. Phillies are stumbling of late. They've lost 3 straight. They're now 13-11. Now, the Mets, I tell you what, the Mets are good right now. They have a 6-game winning streak. They are 17-7 on the year. They are tied with San Diego right now for the best record in baseball. And the Mets, at least here in the early going, have been really rolling. They're doing great. Phillies are, again, kind of stumbling around here, but game three of that series will be today. Do I want to mention my Orioles? They're talking about clunking. Ugh, they were at the Nationals last night and they lost 7-0. Really? 24-2, 7-0. Oof. My Orioles are now 9-13 on the season. Not good. All right. Blue-white game, Saturday, 2 p.m. I think yesterday I may have said 1:30. No. 2 p.m. for the game. Again, if you're going to the game, couple things. First, the weather Saturday, hopefully it's supposed to rain. Hopefully it happens Friday night into Saturday morning, and then it's all over by lunchtime. But either way, if you go to the festivities and game on Saturday, probably going to be a little wet. All right, plan accordingly, a little on the cool side. Probably, I'm going to say, low 60s at best on Saturday. Parking lots open at 8 a.m. Now, of course, you know about the stadium construction, right? The whole west side is a mess, all right? And so areas where if you go to games a lot and you're used to parking on the west side, forget it. Not happening. You're going to have to find some other place to go. Parking, $20. If you show up, $20 to park your car. The seating and gates will be open at 11:30. I don't know if you want to get in early. Again, there are different things happening kind of around the stadium. One cool thing is the national championship teams, women's volleyball and wrestling, are doing an autograph signing event, which is pretty cool. That'll be from 12:30 until 1:15 on Saturday. Let me see. The volleyball team is going to be at Gate B, I believe, and the wrestling team is going to be at Legacy Plaza outside the stadium, 12:30 to 1:15. So hopefully the weather will cooperate on Saturday. Again, from the forecast I've seen, Friday night rain, maybe Saturday morning a little bit of rain, and then hopefully it'll kind of move off. It's still going to be on the cool side. Like today, I don't know, 75 degrees today? Apparently it's not going to be that warm, all right? Keep listening to our friend Joe Bastardi's weather forecast. We'll have another one of those coming up here in a bit if you are planning to check out the thing on Saturday. Came across this on social media, so I will assume it is correct. But somebody made the claim out there, because the NFL draft starts tomorrow evening. We had our friend Mark Brennan from Lines 24/7 on yesterday. By the way, if you missed that, go to our website, 987thefox.info. Go to the Let's Talk section. We have yesterday's show and also separately just the interview with Mark talking about Penn State football and the draft tomorrow night and who's going where and all this sort of stuff. And so on. According to what somebody posted, and again, I'm going to assume this is correct, Penn State is one of only three teams to have had a player drafted in the first three rounds of the NFL draft over the last 19 years. I saw that. I'm like, wow. And I'm trying to think of guys and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And I'm thinking, holy, really? 19 years and only three schools have had guys taken in the first three rounds over the last 19 years. And I'd bet money here you won't be able to guess the other two. All right. Go ahead and think about that for a moment. Three teams. Penn State is one. Two other teams. Who are the other two teams to have guys picked in the first three rounds the last 19 straight years? Well, here are the other two teams. Now, I mean, they're good teams and anything, but I might not have chosen them. Southern Cal is one. USC is one. And the other one is LSU. Now, again, good teams. Okay, yeah, obviously. But you're thinking Alabama? Nope. Ohio State? Nope. Michigan? Nope. I don't know. Oklahoma? Nope. Other teams in the SEC? Nope. That's a fascinating statistic. and one that's, I would say, worthy to be proud of. All right, that's good. That's amazing. What will the Steelers do tomorrow night? We don't know. Pick a quarterback? They'd like to, apparently. Shedeur Sanders, maybe. Jackson Dart? I mean, the Iron Head is high on Jackson Dart. That guy? Maybe. Of course, you still got Aaron Rodgers, just sort of, I don't know, who knows what that guy's doing. The Steelers will figure out what happens with this draft, and then they'll figure out what to do with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's it. Common sense, folks. If they can get a hot quarterback, if it's Dart, again, Jeff really likes Dart. Some people really like Shedeur Sanders. I've seen one or two other names kind of tossed out there. So we'll see what the Steelers do. Now, first round tomorrow night, then it continues on Friday, and, you know, seven rounds, whatever, all that stuff. This isn't a one-day thing. And so we'll see what happens there with the Steelers and their drafting. All right, so there's our sports report for a Wednesday morning. Actually, when we come back from a break, I've got one more Penn State item, which, I don't know, again, I saw this on social media. Somebody did a screen grab, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. All right, let's maybe mention that when it comes to this upcoming Penn State football season. All right, so stay tuned for that. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. And yes, a beautiful day. We'll be right back.
The Fox. Weather.
This is WeatherBell.com podcast.
Fox forecast.
Sunshine returning today. Temperatures will get back up to 70. Clear and chillier tonight. Low temperature 35 to 40. Thursday, some sunshine and warm. The high 75. Friday will follow suit. WeatherBell.com chief meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox.
Fox Sports.
If you're like me, you have neighbors that have zero-turn mowers, and some are satisfied and others not so much. I've had neighbors come over while I'm mowing with my Kubota and want to try it out. I told Bob and Clyde, you need to get to Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota. I have a Z200 25 horsepower with the simplest operation and a pristine cut every time. Even though I have a lawn and, shall we say, a challenging bank, ditch, and of course the wife's ornamental bushes. If you're trying to decide on a great lawn care machine, get to Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. At Dodder Equipment, they're experts on Kubota lawn care machines that keep you moving quickly and efficiently. Your destination for Kubota is Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. You may even meet my neighbors, Bob and Clyde.
Sports fans flock to the We Are Inn in Phillipsburg for fun, great food and drink, and to cheer on the Nittany Lions. Now, coming to State College soon, visit the new Happy Valley Live by the We Are Inn next to the Hampton Inn, the former Damon's Restaurant. Happy Valley Live will become your go-to spot for sport, great Italian and American cuisine, the best bar in town, special rooms for parties and meetings. It's a Penn State fan's dream, just down the street from Beaver Stadium and the Jordan Center, and they're hiring. The countdown is on. The new Happy Valley Live is coming soon.
My old DJ days, which was a long time ago, folks. Let's talk here for a Wednesday morning. Scott with you. Dr. Michael Berkman, Penn State, political science professor, going to join us. We're going to talk some politics. Oh, what will we talk about? Well, we've got plenty of things, I think, to talk about. He'll be joining us coming up in the next hour. We have a few minutes of open time if you want to chime in real quick at 814-954-7266. 814-954-7266. Yeah, something, you know, social media is interesting. I've mentioned many times, don't necessarily believe everything you see on social media, because you got some shysters out there that are just intentionally wrong, trying to, you know, mess with your head. Or people will see something and they'll have a reaction to it that's just inaccurate, just incorrect. And you see a lot of that. I mean, just people making ridiculous comments and so on. I came across this yesterday from, now this isn't from a person, this is from one of these, I guess call them newbie media outlets that just posts content. And so I'm going to assume in most cases it's correct. Now this one is correct because this person did a screenshot of the Penn State football schedule this fall. And the premise of the person's post was, I'll read it. It says, would you take Penn State over or under 10.5 regular season wins this season? Again, betting, you know, betting stuff. And people bet on this stuff. I don't. I never will. But some people do. So over under 10.5. Well, guess what? That's either 10 or it's 11 or maybe 12. All right. So the idea is Penn State going to maybe lose one game? If they lose two games, that's 10. So the over under, that's more of this sort of thing. Okay, whatever. What interested me on this screenshot, and I'm not exactly sure where the screenshot came from, but on the right hand side of the screenshot, it talks about ticket prices for all the different games on the Penn State schedule this fall. In other words, current ticket prices. So this person did a screenshot from, StubHub or one of these places where you can buy tickets. And there's a whole bunch of these now. Ticketmaster, StubHub, there's a bunch of these. And I wasn't, you know, the over-under, I could care less. The ticket prices is what interested me. So, in other words, it says tickets as low as fill in the blank for all the different games this fall, at least as of right now. And I just thought, okay, this is interesting. I found this fascinating. So what do we have here is, let's see, it starts on August 30th. Now, again, Penn State's non-conference schedule early is, I mean, these games should all be done by halftime, all of them. Okay. Nevada, okay. Florida International, no. Villanova, no. All right, no. Okay. So that's the first 3 weeks of the season. Of course, they're all at Beaver Stadium. What are the ticket prices? Well, according to this screenshot, for the Nevada opener on August 30th, you can get tickets for as low as $26. Now, yes, for a Penn State football game, that's a bargain. All right? Whoosh. Big-time bargain. Which tells me people have season tickets, and Nevada just doesn't do much for them. So they put them up for sale on one of these sites. Okay. Florida International, September 6th. Same deal. Tickets as low as $26. All right? Nice day to go tailgate, hopefully. September 13th, Villanova, all right, Pennsylvania game, if you will. For whatever reason, it says here tickets as low as $40. So that's a little higher for Villanova. All right, that's kind of interesting. Then, of course, then there's an off week, and we've talked about this before. Penn State now, I guess everybody, has two off weeks for football in the fall. And ironically, this season, the two off weeks are before the Oregon game and, of course, before the Ohio State game. Who makes this up? Pat Kraft, did you do that? I mean, if you want to set things up nice, neat, and clean, bing, there it is, right? Now, September 27th is the Oregon game. Now, remember the other prices. I said $26 and $40. Great, wonderful. Oregon game, September 27th, and yes, Big Ten Network, it better be at night. Hello? No Big Noon. Message to Fox Sports TV. No Big Noon. Thank you. Oregon game, get ready. Tickets as low as $200. Whoa. You think people want to come to that one? Yeah. Weiss. Yeesh. Okay. Penn State's first road game. Remember, the first four games are home. How about that? September at home. That's about it. The first road game is at UCLA, October 4. Now, that's Los Angeles. Okay. Tickets as low as $145. Out at the Rose Bowl, where USC play, or UCLA plays. All right. Then back home for November or October 11th, Northwestern, All right, tickets as low as $63. All right, it's going up. Big Ten numbers are going up. Yes, Penn State, five of their first six games are at home. So the first half of the season, except for a trip to the West Coast, they're home. All right, great. Well, what about the second half of the season? Uh-oh. Only two out of six at home. There's where things could get interesting. October 18th at Iowa. Always tough. Tickets as low as $97. All right, that's up there. Then there's an off week. Then November 1st is Ohio State. Penn State has five games in November, if you haven't looked at the schedule. That's interesting. November 1st at Ohio State says here, tickets as low as $159. Woo! Now, interesting, not as much as Oregon. Again, the Oregon price right now, and this is only going to go up, is $200. So if you're out there, you're like, I want to get tickets to the games, you should move, all right? Don't wait till later, because these numbers, I'm certain, will go up. November 8th, at home with Indiana, tickets as low as $92, all right? November 15th, at Michigan State, tickets as low as $89. Okay, not bad. Now, here's the one that's the mystery to me. Now, I'm taking this from the screen grab from some ticket place. November 22nd, the last home game, that's against Nebraska. Nebraska, senior day, all that stuff. It says here, tickets as low as $59? That's it? See, that I'm scratching my head on that one. Really? That is really low. For the Nebraska game right now on November 22nd, is it because of weather? People are afraid of weather? I was flummoxed by that. $59, that's it? So, folks, plan accordingly. And then the regular season finale at Rutgers, November 29th. Tickets as low as $90 for that one. So Nebraska right now sounds like a real bargain. And then the Oregon game in late September, ouch, $200, according to this. Yo, that is a serious chunk of change. Whew. All right, so again, folks, plan accordingly. All right, do what you have to do if you want to get tickets. Now, keep in mind, the West stands. Well, we'll see what they do with the West stands. They're supposed to put, I don't know, some kind of an upper deck is going to go there on the west side. Remember, they took the whole press box down that day. Boom, down it came. And if you go there, now, if you go on Saturday, obviously you'll see it up close and personal. It's a mess. I mean, there's a lot of things going on there. But they're going to be adding some seating by, well, the end of August, I guess. And we'll I've seen, you know, I've seen the artist renderings and all that sort of thing. And it looks okay. That's cool. And then when the season's over, I don't know, they tear it all apart again so they can do more work. I'm not sure. But the ticket prices, again, are just, I find that stuff fascinating. That, you know, you can go to these places and, okay, I've got two tickets for sale. Here's my price. I've done that a time or two in the past for, you know, this game or that game and so on. You know, baseball game. I mean, they pretty much do it for, you know, all major sports now. Very interesting. Let me repeat this again. If you go on Saturday, here's a great opportunity to meet the Penn State women's volleyball team, national champs, and the Penn State wrestlers, national champs. Wonder if the Iron has a part of this deal. He should be. Saturday, 12:30 to 1:15 p.m., the women's volleyball team will be at Gate B. So this is before the football game. They'll be at Gate B. Apparently, it says free, signing autographs. Hey, that's a great opportunity. And the wrestling team will be at Legacy Plaza. And again, says free, same deal, signing autographs. So, those two teams were phenomenal this year. So if you have an interest in either one of them or both of them, again, it's 45 minutes, you can definitely make both. Plan accordingly. Hopefully, again, the weather on Saturday will be okay. It won't be splendiferous like today, apparently. But hopefully if we get that, we're supposed to get some rain Friday night. Hopefully that'll be gone by Saturday morning. Still might be a little squishy in a few places. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. No squishy here. We'll be back.
WeatherBell.com Foxcast.
Fox Forecast.
Sunshine returning today. Temperatures will get back up to 70. Clear and chillier tonight. Low temperature 35 to 40. Thursday, some sunshine and warm. The high 75. Friday will follow suit. WeatherBell.com Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox.
Fox Sports.
Let Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox make you a winner this summer with our Summer Splash Contest with Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. This Father's Day weekend, the Fox will be giving away a spacious hot springs hot tub during the Belfont Cruise at Talleyrand Park in downtown Belfont. Stop by these fine locations and get signed up to become a qualifier for the contest. PIMP, located 136 South Harrison Road in Pleasant Gap and at Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. No purchase necessary.
The 36th Annual Historic Belfont Cruise coming up Father's Day weekend, June 13th and 14th. Top-notch entertainment all weekend long. It starts out Friday night with an open cruise, a sock-off, the big car show on Saturday with over 30-plus classes of cars, trucks, and motorcycles on display. Plenty of sponsorship opportunities for you. Call 814-280-5881 or visit BelfontCruise.org. That's 814-280-5881 or BelfontCruise.org. The 36th Annual Historic Belfont Cruise, Father's Day weekend, June 13th and 14th.
Hey, this is Joe Ludnuski. Join Jack Quinn and me every weekday, Monday through Friday, 12 to 2, for PA Sports Midday, Pennsylvania Sports Network, and streaming at pasports.net. Jack, Joe, me, you, all of us. It's going to be a good time every time right here on these radio stations, Monday through Friday, 12 to 2. It's the Midday Show, boys and girls. Be there or be square. We're streaming at pasports.net, the Pennsylvania Sports Network.
When winter's at its worst, snowplow professionals need the best. That's why your local Boss dealer has the ultimate lineup of snow and ice solutions you need. Front to back, Boss leads with advanced truck plows and spreaders, compact equipment, heavy equipment, and time-saving tools to clear any surface area. Keep them open with a Boss snowplow, built to back you up.
Maxwell Truck and Equipment, 1705 East Trout Road, State College. Call them at 814-234-2672.
Sports fans flock to the We Are Inn in Phillipsburg for fun, great food and drink, and to cheer on the Nittany Lions. Now, coming to State College soon, visit the new Happy Valley Live by the We Are Inn next to the Hampton Inn, the former Damon's Restaurant. Happy Valley Live will become your go-to spot for sport, great Italian and American cuisine, the best bar in town, special rooms for parties and meetings. It's a Penn State fan's dream just down the street from Beaver Stadium and the Jordan Center, and they're hiring. The countdown is on. The new Happy Valley Live is coming soon.
Would you like to profit from Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox? If you have sales experience, we're looking for new team members to spread the word to local businesses about 98.7 The Fox. Sell advertising with a lot of potential from all of our Fox programs, Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, and live sports events focused right here in Center County. For more information, contact manager Sam Jordan via email at foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. That's foxsportshappyvalley@gmail.com. Join us here at 98.7 The Fox.
Your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
98.7 The Fox. Back on the chain gang, folks, doing the heavy lifting of sorts. Hey, it's radio. All right, play along. Let's talk here for a Wednesday morning program. We will have a little bit more open line time toward the end of this hour. But again, come on, folks. I know you politics. You love talking about politics. Yes, you do. And we welcome back our friend, Dr. Michael Berkman, Penn State political science professor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Whoop, let me make sure I get the right. Go ahead. Say good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. That works. Hey, it's amazing what happens when you push the right buttons. Okay. It's been a fun 3 months.
It's been quite 100 days.
When is 100 days? That's
well,
next
I'm not
week.
I'm quite sure, but we're right around the 100-day mark. Yeah.
About now.
Yeah, I think we're at 3 months, which is what I heard
okay.
last night
from
somebody. It's been quite 100 days.
All right.
I've never seen anything like it.
We will get on to that in just a little bit. Yep. We'll save the heavy stuff for a little later. When we've had you on, I'm very interested in education, mm-hmm. and, we've done shows with Penn State students, and in this case, talking about politics and stuff like that. It's been a lot of fun. You're a political science professor, and here we go. We're coming up to the end of the semester.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just like, graduation day, I guess, is the 10th of May. What's your schedule like the next 2 weeks? Is this like cramming or what happens?
It's a busy time. Yeah. So classes are quite busy. People are completing final projects, preparing for final exams, which take place obviously during finals week. Students are, beyond all the fun that goes on in the spring, they're finalizing internship plans, figuring out what they're doing next year. And then everything slows down.
All right.
And
how many political science student majors are there?
Ooh, I should know that, but I don't.
Round
where I think we're the third largest major in the college.
Wow.
After psychology and economics. But I'm not in the department administration, so I may have those numbers. I may not have those numbers just right. And I couldn't even guess at a number.
I mean, 100?
No, several hundred at least.
Several hundred?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have, excuse me, we operate three majors, political science major, international politics, and something called social data analytics. We also offer the political science degree as both a BS and a BA. So we have a lot of things going on and a lot of students.
BS, by the way, is Bachelor of Science.
Yes, and a Bachelor of
Not
arts.
The other BS?
Yes, not the other BS. That's another major.
What was that third one? Social data?
Social data analytics, yeah.
What is that?
So this is a major that's kind of a marriage of big data analytics, which is an area that our department has a lot of strength at the graduate and research level. And it's designed with other social science majors, and so it's teaching students how to use basically big data sets with different kinds of social science questions, whether it's sociology or political science.
Every time I turn around, doctor, data, yeah. Data's like everywhere. But haven't we always had data? Is this a relatively new major?
It is a relatively new major, and, the whole... Whew. I'm not an expert in this area, but I had to say over the last 10 years or so, we've really seen an explosion of big data kinds of programs. And what's happened is we have new statistical techniques. And so we're able to use much larger data sets than we ever could before. Computing power is a lot more efficient than it used to be. So it's not going to take 4 days to run some sort of analysis. We also have access to sort of data sets that we never did before. So there's certainly in my discipline, there's a lot of work that's done in the field of text to data. So that's the conversion of text into data. For a long time, people were working with different types of Twitter data. So Twitter tweets turned into data. So, government data, all kinds of different data that can come in very, very large data sets.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And many of our students are graduate students are very well trained in this. And then at the undergraduate level, we try to introduce students to it.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. So what's a final look like for your students? Is it multiple choice, fill in the blank, or is it more than
that? Yeah, I'm probably not the best person for finding out what's going on in the classroom because I administer the McCourtney Institute, so I don't teach that much. And what I do teach are lower level classes. So my final exam will be, like my other exams this semester, it'll be multiple choice, drawing heavily from the textbook, and it will be some open-ended questions that draw more largely from reading and lectures.
Now, you mentioned internships. I was going to ask about that because I assume there are students that, I guess, for the summer, they become interns of who, what? I mean, where do they go?
Well, that's all a bit of a mess this summer.
Uh-oh.
So previous summers, I'd say, sure, we send people down to Capitol Hill. We send them to different agencies within Washington. Remember, we're political science. We send them to different interest groups, all that kind of thing. But it has been very challenging to set up internships this summer because of the uncertainty in Washington. So departments, agencies have no idea what kind of internships they might have. They don't even know if they're going to be working next week. And so we've had a very difficult time setting up internships. And in fact, I think we might have, the department anyway, might have canceled its summer internship program, which is impossible to set anything up.
Wow.
Now, students may find internships by themselves, and I know some that have. And out of them, Courtney Institute, which I'm involved with, we have our own internship program where we fully pay for students to do their internships, and we send them not to Washington, but to programs around the country that are doing different kinds of work in democracy.
What about Harrisburg?
We have students that do internships in Harrisburg, quite a few. I'm not that involved with our undergraduate programs here, so I don't know how many might be going down there, but certainly over the years we've had plenty of students.
Or other state capitals.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Because yeah. Mm-hmm. Not every Penn Stater's from Pennsylvania. We got kids from everywhere.
Absolutely. And sometimes the more interesting work is in the state capitals because they can get much more involved with things.
Now, you mentioned international. What about overseas? Internships overseas, maybe?
I've known that to be the case in the past, but again, there is just so much uncertainty these days, it's hard for me to say what's going to happen this summer.
Interesting. All right. Very interesting.
Uncertainty is the word of the word of the hour, I think. There is a lot of uncertainty in Washington about everything. We're feeling it just in the development of these internship programs.
All right. Now, when we communicated recently, and you're like, what are we going to talk about? I said one thing I absolutely want to talk about, which I think a lot of Americans really don't understand, is the separation of powers between. Now, folks, we're going back to school. Okay, come on, play with me here. Executive branch, legislative branch, judicial branch. Come on, you know those three, right? They haven't changed. The checks and balances and all that sort of thing. Because clearly we've got a president now who's pushing the envelope to see what he can either get done or get away with. All right. Now, some of you may disagree with that, but come on. I mean, take a look. And I just wanted to, you know, you're expert and so on in Washington and such. Let's describe this separation of powers, which we've had from the Constitution, very beginning. First off, what is it? Let's talk about the separation of powers, the three branches. How does all that supposed to work?
Right. So when the framers, in particular James Madison, was designing the Constitution, they were very concerned with the idea of power being concentrated in the hands of any one individual or any one branch of government. So they were drawing from the French philosopher Montesquieu in this, that powers had to be separated to prevent tyranny from developing in the government. And so they were very careful about that, and they gave the power of the purse to the legislature, they gave the power of the sword to the executive, and the judicial branch, which they were concerned would not actually have sufficient power, was basically given the power of judicial review over the decisions made by the other two branches of government. Each was designed to have a sufficient power to check the other branch of government. So the president could check Congress by vetoing a bill, but Congress could check the executive by overriding that veto. The court could check either one by finding what they did to be unconstitutional. That could be overridden by a constitutional amendment. The actions of a president may be so outrageous that Congress has to use its final check, which is the power to impeach the president or the power to impeach a member of the court. This is how it was designed to be. And further, and this is why, you know, if any of your listeners really want to go to school, why Federalist 51 is considered so important, Federalist Paper number 51, they believed that each branch would have sufficient people with sufficient ambition that they would want to protect the branch against other branches of government, so that members of the legislature would have distinct interests from members from the executive branch, that they would pursue those through the legislature, and they would protect the institutional integrity of their branch of government. So I think if what we're seeing right now is somewhat of a breakdown in this, in a couple of directions. Congress has clearly sort of abdicated its duty to check the executive. Now, it's not the first time we've seen this, because when they designed the Constitution, they weren't really thinking about political parties, although they should have been. And so the political party of the executive is the same as the Congress. It's not just now. We've seen that at many times. And therefore, they're going to work together more than they're necessarily going to check one another. But there have been various times in history where Congress has really stepped up and asserted its authority against the president. You know, in the 1970s, they passed a congressional, the Impoundment Act to prevent the executive from impounding funds. They passed the War Powers Act to prevent the president from just going to war. They passed an act that said that if the president used emergency powers, like Trump is now, that Congress would have an override on these executive powers. So a variety of these were put into place. What we're seeing now, I mean, I think your statement that the president is pushing the bounds is a very good way of putting it. That's exactly what's happening. You know, there are over 200 lawsuits right now against the administration. These are dealing with a whole range of issues, but some of these are these separation of powers issues. For example, the way the president just impounded funds across multiple agencies is to many a violation of the Impoundment and Control Act. The way DOGE is, firing employees might be a violation of civil service rules. So there are all these kinds of different battles that are going on that do have a lot to do with the separation of powers. And I apologize for too long an answer.
No, that's perfect.
Complicated area.
No, it is a complicated area.
Yeah.
And it's just like seemingly every day, boom, 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 there's something new.
Well,
you mentioned all these lawsuits.
Yeah.
That's never happened before.
No, there are these litigation trackers that I check every once in a while. So it was like 202 earlier in the week. It was 203 later in the week. And I was just sort of curious. I took the Wayback Machine and I looked at it for about 6 weeks ago, and it was only 125. And, you know, so it's accelerating at a fairly rapid rate. And I don't think we've ever seen anything like that before. We've also never had litigation trackers, so I wouldn't even know how to be sure. But usually when presidents come in their 100 days, the instinct is to try to work with Congress, see what they can do. The president usually comes in with some sort of legislative agenda. What's so striking about what I think Trump is doing is that he wants to give really the appearance of action. And so executive orders allow him to act really quickly all over the place. You know, many of them won't be upheld, and many of them could just be easily overturned, but they give the appearance of action, and they do cause the bureaucracy to do things. You know, but he doesn't, in what I've seen, have much of a legislative agenda. And, you know, presumably he could get a bit bogged down when things do finally move into the Congress and he tries to get through whatever kind of tax cut they're talking about and trying to get through a budget. I don't know that there's really much more beyond that that they're trying to do through the legislature.
Where are all these lawsuits coming from? Members of Congress? Just people? I mean, who's doing all this stuff?
Well, often, you know, organizations on behalf of people. So the ACLU is involved in a lot of suits on behalf of deportees, for example. There are all these due process suits that are coming up. Harvard has very good lawyers that it hires on its own. They happen to actually be very, very well-known Republican lawyers that they're using. So there are immigrants' rights groups that are representing immigrants in a variety of migrants in a variety of these lawsuits, and some are just individual people, you know, or institutions that feel like they were wronged.
Okay,
there might be some from members of Congress too. You know, there are also a series of lawsuits that are coming from the states. And so this is something we've seen for quite a long time. I mean, I think Josh Shapiro kind of cut his teeth as attorney general suing the first Trump administration. Ted Cruz cut his teeth when he was in Texas suing the Obama administration. There's the lawsuit coming from Maine, I believe. from the governor of Maine, yes. And there are other lawsuits out there as well that are coming from the states. You know, the framers intended two main limits on the concentration of power. We talked about separation of powers as one. The other was federalism, which divides power between the states and national government. And we see that as especially blue states kind of push back through lawsuits and other sorts of actions.
So the really happy people right now are lawyers.
Well, not the ones that got attacked by the that the administration went after and denied access to the White House. They're not having such a good time. But yeah, I guess it's a good season to be a lawyer.
All right.
Yeah.
So
is it ever not a good season to be a lawyer?
The so-called founding fathers set this all up almost 250 years ago. And I mean, I'm trying to think of England, Magna Carta. There was nothing like this. Or was there before the Constitution? Was there something Constitution-like somewhere? You mentioned France and so on. Before the Constitution showed up, was it that monumentally different, or we just stole a bunch of ideas from other people?
Well, both. I mean, yes, I think it was monumentally different as a Constitution. I'm not sure there was any other There was no other constitutional democracy at the time when we formed our constitution. But we, without a doubt, I mean, the framers were well-educated men, and they drew quite heavily on the experiences of ancient Athens, on Rome, on drawing from philosophers like Montesquieu, and I mean, John Locke's thoughts are all over the Declaration of Independence. So it's not like they're working in a vacuum, but they certainly created something that was original, and that required them to make some very, very challenging and maybe even immoral sorts of compromises in order to sort of pull the South along in this constitutional project.
I keep hearing the phrase constitutional crisis, and I'm thinking, is that true, or people just, they need to blow and vent? Are there anything that's happened in the last 3 months? Is it really a constitutional crisis, or is it Trump just, I'm going to push and push and see what I can get away with?
Yeah.
Which I don't see as a crisis. He's playing the game, and he's pushing, and we'll see where it ends up. What do you think?
I've tended to believe that we have a constitutional crisis when one branch of government is not following the legitimate expectations of another branch of government. Let me put that in another way. We have a constitutional crisis if the Supreme Court tells the president to do something and he says no. That could be a constitutional crisis. And have we reached that point? I don't really think so. I think that the courts give the government a huge amount of leeway when negotiating, when pursuing lawsuits. Courts tend to sort of side with the government, they negotiate with the government. And one thing you might notice, for example, in Roberts' decision about the Garcia case, in the court's decision. And so it was an interesting decision. It was 9-0. They said that, you know, migrants have due process rights, so they're entitled to due process. That was a unanimous decision. But then they wrote the decision in such a way that didn't say you must go get this guy and bring him back to the United States, but rather gave them leeway. I said you need to facilitate it. Well, what does facilitate mean? So it gave them leeway, because I think that what Roberts really doesn't want to do is create a situation where the Supreme Court tells the president, you have to do this, and he says, no, I'm not going to do it. That, I think, is potentially a constitutional crisis. But I'll offer another way of thinking about it,
right,
which is more like, that's like a crisis as an episode. We get to this point and we're in crisis, though. Other people might think of it more like the climate crisis. And that is a sort of condition that we're in, where the president has clearly been, I don't want to say not shown deference to the court. He's downright insults the court continuously, in a way that sort of suggests that he doesn't respect their authority. And I think that creates a general feeling of lawlessness. I think there are other things that have contributed to a feeling of lawlessness too, like pardoning the January 6th people. And so that to me is kind of a crisis, but it's a crisis, it's a slow burn crisis. It's more like a condition that we're in. If there are 200 lawsuits against the administration in the first 100 days, it could mean that lawyers are just looking to make some money. Or it could mean that maybe there's something of a crisis going on.
All right, I just put my hands like, yes, lawyers trying to make money.
Yes.
There we go.
That's
Bing.
Really part of it, too.
Where's my bell? I've got to ring the bell there. We'll take a break in just a moment. Now, you mentioned what is the check on the judicial branch? Now, you say, okay, they can pass a constitutional amendment. Well, good luck with that. That takes a lot of heavy lifting to put a new amendment in the Constitution. And this isn't just recently. Now, maybe I'm wrong, Doctor. You tell me. It just seems like for years, whoever the president is at that time will make a decision, and out it goes, and somebody somewhere will find some federal judge someplace who will make a pronouncement, no, you can't do that. And so one federal judge in some who knows where stops everything.
Yeah,
did I describe that accurately?
Yes, I mean, this is something that's been driving the administration crazy, that district judges can make decisions that, you know, put nationwide injunctions on things. But they are allowed to do that. And, you know, if the perception is by courts above the district court that, man, they shouldn't have done this, this is too broad, then they have the appeals process. So, I mean, the court system is self-correcting. You can always appeal. And one thing I think that the Trump administration is clearly trying to do here is flood the courts with so many cases, right? The Supreme Court's going to have to take some of them. I don't know which ones. But they want all these to get to the Supreme Court so that they can try to push the boundaries of what's acceptable. Like, I don't think that they think, oh, we're going to win all these. They know they're going to lose some of them. And they may even think, oh, we're going to lose on some, we're going to win on some, you know, win something on some of them and lose others on some. But at least they're pushing forward. And I think that's somewhat of a plan. I hear them attacking district judges, you know, because there is this notion of venue shopping. You look around for the courts that are going to work to your advantage. They're doing it too, keep in mind. I mean, the reason they're whisking people down to Louisiana is because the circuit court down there is the most conservative circuit court in the country, right? So they do it too. But yes, they're concerned about the district judges doing this. But to my knowledge, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but to my knowledge, they're perfectly allowed to do this. And if they're not, upper levels will turn them over. Now, you asked to check on the courts. You want me?
Yeah.
So there are multiple checks on the court. Remember, Roosevelt's check on the court was to threaten to enlarge it. Because Roosevelt was upset with a series of decisions that were, in effect, not allowing the New Deal to go forward. And this was what we, in political science courses, switch in time that saved nine, where the court literally turned on a dime in its decisions about the constitutionality of many provisions of the New Deal, because Roosevelt said, well, I'll just add five of you. And I'll appoint those five, and we won't have a problem anymore. The size of the court, that's set by Congress. They can change that at any time. They can't change the lifetime tenure, and you're right. The framers set up this amendment process. They knew it would be tough. I don't know if they knew it would be this tough to get amendments through.
Yeah.
And I also think they thought the impeachment process would work in a way that it's clearly not, because it's become so partisan.
I mean, impeachment is pointless now.
Yes.
I mean, it's because it's happened multiple times. In recent years.
And it's just another partisan exercise. But even with Nixon, it largely was. But the difference was they had enough Republicans that were willing to come forward to say, you got to get out before this happens.
All right. Let's take a break right here. Again, our guest is Dr. Michael Berkman, Penn State political science professor. Franklin Roosevelt, not the other one. I want to compare him and Trump when we come back, because I don't know, I see similarities in different ways. Democrat, Republican, okay. All right, friends, let's see if we can learn a few things here on a Wednesday morning, okay? You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. All right, conversations, not arguments. I like those. We'll see if we can do some more of that when we come right back.
Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox is where you will hear Paul Skeens pitch.
Swing and a miss, another strikeout for Skeens. That's four through two innings.
Six up, six down for Paul Skeens.
And this is where you can learn that Key Brian Hayes is one of the best defensive players in Major League Baseball.
Bunyan, Warren Baruchy now to third. Hayes, bare hands, throws, and got him! Terrific play by Key Brian Hayes! Magnificent!
Or perhaps you're just wondering, how do you answer?
Swing, fly ball, deep right field, cruises in a grand slam! That's how you answer! That's how you answer!
Stay tuned for more Pirates baseball all summer long, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Box. And hopefully you remember how to properly use your Jolly Roger.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
This year's Penn State Board of Trustees election is about transparency and competence. And Pat Romano is asking for your alumni vote. Pat is a successful local business owner from Phillipsburg and a leader on the World Campus Alumni Board who believes in lowering student tuition, saving Commonwealth campuses, improving the Penn State student experience, and in honoring Joe and Sue Paterno by returning the Joe Paterno statue. Number three on your alumni ballot, Pat Romano will focus on Penn State's future and enough of the nonsense. This spring, vote for Pat Romano for the Penn State Board of Trustees.
Now a fraternity or sorority is a brotherhood or sisterhood formed around common goals and aspirations. These men and women make a commitment to each other for life. The members that form a fraternity or sorority share their efforts, friendship, and knowledge, but they should never, ever look the same. That's why there's PAMP, printing and more printing. All kinds of t-shirts for all of your group's events, with the artwork as wild as... artwork as visually stimulating as your mind's eye sees it.
For quality you can see and wear, remember PAMP for customized t-shirts, letterheads, envelopes, magnetic signs, and business cards. PAMP has a low minimum of 12 shirts for printing and no minimum on embroidered items. They don't charge art fees or setup fees. Pricing is simple and easy, and they have a quick turnaround. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located at 136 South Harrison Road, Pleasant Gap. For more information, call 814-359-2447.
As you look out onto your yard or acreage, you know it's coming. Lots of work and time. You may be excited about it because you have a Kubota from Daughter Equipment, which actually makes chores fun and frees up your time for other things. Or maybe you're looking at the lawn and acreage with a scowl because you don't even know if your lawn and garden equipment will even start. You need to get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota and the answers. If it's your first tractor, it's hard to decide how much horsepower you're looking for, what implements you'll need. Whether you're gardening or landscaping and keeping up with property maintenance, just being behind the wheel of a Kubota makes you appreciate the Kubota Compact Tractor for its simplicity and ease. Your destination for Kubota is Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64.
Let's talk for a Wednesday, an absolutely gorgeous Wednesday. So it's not worth arguing, okay? So we're not going to do that. All right, we're having a good conversation here, trying to, I don't know, learn some things with our friend Dr. Michael Berkman, Penn State political science professor. All right, now you mentioned Roosevelt earlier, as in Franklin Roosevelt. I don't know, maybe we could actually toss Teddy in there, possibly. But when I think Franklin Roosevelt, 1930s, he comes in with this ambitious agenda, New Deal, all these things he wants to do. Okay, he gets in. All right, let's get going. Am I correct? When we say the first 100 days, that started with him.
Yeah, I guess.
Did it not? Right? Right? It started with FDR.
Yeah.
So do me a favor, compare FDR and Donald Trump, like these 3 months of the beginning of an administration. I see similarities. What do you think?
I guess you could say that it's similar in terms of the level of activity, right? There's been a lot of activity in both. I mean, the Roosevelt first 100 days, Roosevelt administration was an entirely different kind of story because Roosevelt had huge congressional majorities, and everything that he did Everything he did a lot on the war side, but what he did domestically, he did through Congress and passing of legislation. And in fact, when Roosevelt comes in, the presidency is not really that big an institution, the executive branch. It's built under Roosevelt, and it's built by Congress, passing laws that build, you know, the Department of Agriculture and all these huge departments in Washington, D.C., and these are all underneath the president. So it's Roosevelt using the Congress to build executive power. He also had a very ambitious agenda of programs through Congress. So I don't see Trump doing that at all, because everything Trump is doing is just through these executive orders, and they, you know, they have the power of law, but they're easily just erased by the next administration. Roosevelt built permanent presence. He changed the entire state. Now, Trump is, I think, changing the American state, but he's doing it by eliminating and cutting things out, not by building them. So Doge was just like a bulldozer through the bureaucracy, cutting things down, not really for any particular purpose other than going after people that you could. And so, for example, newly promoted people, I learned this, that in the civil service, if you get a new promotion, then you're actually on parole or probation for that first year. They knock those people out. So that I see quite differently. The desire to be the focal point, that is very similar, I think. But this was built by Roosevelt. You know, before Roosevelt, the American people really didn't have a direct relationship with the president. And Roosevelt started these fireside chats and made himself very open and available to people, but in a very limited way. Like, people didn't even know that he was in a wheelchair. He was so able to control this information. Now, Trump, too, is always in our face, and it's kind of a continuation of this idea that the president has become the focal point. But that was started with Roosevelt. I'm not exactly sure what Trump is sort of starting for us going forward. So I get where the comparison comes in, but I think there's some real important differences, too.
Now, I don't know, though. You mentioned this, all right? So during the 30s and I guess into the 40s, FDR had big, he's a Democrat, he had big Democrat majorities in Congress the whole stretch?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. I don't think the Democrats are going to lose Congress until Eisenhower. And, you know, part of it, too, was that the census was screwed up in there at one point. I don't remember exactly which one it was, and they didn't redistrict properly. So then all of a sudden there were a rush in new urban districts, because population had been shifting into urban areas throughout this industrializing period, you know, in the early 1900s, 1920. But the thing is, they hadn't really reapportioned Congress. And so when they did that, all of a sudden Democrats had huge majorities. Roosevelt could do whatever he wanted. Really, the only thing standing in his way were the courts. And concerns from Southern Democrats about racial issues, which worked its way into the New Deal in all kinds of ways. But Trump hasn't been able to, has no legislative majorities really to speak of. The Senate's not filibuster proof. And the House, it's so thin, you know, it's kind of up to whoever's not in the hospital on that day.
Although I'm wondering, here's my thought. Now, Roosevelt was a politician, former governor of New York, did other things in government, and then he becomes president. Donald Trump's a businessman, never was a politician. I'm wondering if he even had really solid majorities in Congress, that wouldn't matter. This is a businessman. I'm going to run this place like my business. I'm going to ram it through because this is what I want. What do you does that sound about right to you?
Perfectly plausible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That he is not at all oriented around the idea of working with a legislative majority. And it's true. Roosevelt was. Not only that he was a governor, but, you know, many of the ideas that he brought in came from the progressives in New York and some other states. And literally the progressive, like the Progressive Party.
So there hasn't, I'm trying to think of past presidents especially, and somebody who was just a business person. I don't think there has been anybody before this guy. I can't think of one. They were all politicians. They were governors. They were senators.
Yeah,
they came from something
Eisenhower
else.
Eisenhower was a general.
Okay, Eisenhower was a general. There's one.
Yeah.
But not a businessman.
Yeah, I guess that's, you know, Ross Perot is probably the last real businessman to make a run at.
Yeah, but he didn't serve, obviously. I'm talking
about
people that actually got elected.
Yeah, I get that.
I mean, Eisenhower in the 50s, did he try to run everything like I'm the general of the army again?
And he was frustrated by.
By?
The fact that he couldn't run
things. That he couldn't.
Like he was a general in the military.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, people bring their past experience in.
All right.
I think that's absolutely accurate. And the other thing about Trump about being a businessman is I think he sees the world in transactional terms. And that too is somewhat different.
Now, all, again, tariffs and trade and all this sort of stuff. This is, what was his book? The Art of the Deal. This is the deal maker stepping in. He's going to make a whole bunch of new deals. Not new deals like Roosevelt new deals, just he's going to make a whole bunch of deals. I'm a businessman. That's what's going to happen. When I'm looking at that, that's what I see. Now, you're nodding your head. Does that sound about right?
I think there is. I find his use of the tariffs slippery, you know, so on the
one. What does that mean?
Well, let me reframe that. I find the arguments a little bit slippery. So I understood tariffs as a way of building manufacturing, but then I also understand tariffs as a sort of tool for Trump to use in bargaining for whatever. And the fact is, we don't really know what kinds of bargains there are that might be being made. It just seems, I think that what Trump really does like and that tariffs allow him to do, and they brag about this in the White House, is to now have people coming to him saying, you know, make a deal with me, I'll give you this, give me this, give me this, you have to, and that's the way he likes to do things. It's problematic in a democracy. Things really should be working through the legislature, but be that as it may, that I think is very much how he sees tariffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's, you know, fighting the markets on this and everything else.
So over the weekend, there were more of these protests around the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people shouting, you know, toting signs and all this sort of stuff. And I saw a photo in one story of a crowd, might have been Harrisburg, I can't remember, where one person near the front of the crowd's got this big sign that says, "Save our democracy." Mm-hmm. Is our democracy threatened right now? Just give me an opinion.
Yes.
What do you think? You say yes. Why?
Because I think we're seeing really dangerous authoritarian tendencies in the executive branch. And I think you're seeing it in how he's dealing with the other branches of government. I think you see it in how he's dealing with the bureaucracy below him. And, you know, let's face it, they have this legal theory behind them that I think is going to carry a lot of weight in the court, and that is this idea of the unitary executive that basically says that all power in the executive branch flows up to the president himself. That's why they're taking on all these independent regulatory agencies, and that's why he makes, you know, comments about maybe getting rid of the Powell at the Fed, because the Fed is the ultimate of the independent agencies, and he's basically saying, no way, I control all of these. And I mean, there's good court precedent that he doesn't, but that doesn't mean that won't change, because I think this unitary executive theory has really worked its way into conservative legal circles and up to the court. But I'm quite disturbed by some of what he does. I think that pardoning of the January 6th people was a very dangerous move, that it conveyed a disrespect for the rule of law. And I think it put dangerous people on the street who feel like, so long as I'm supporting Donald Trump, I got nothing to worry about.
All right, here's my thought. Let's see what mm-hmm. you think. I was not in support of that either. Now, there were some bad actors on January 6th, and we saw them. But there were a lot of, I think, innocent people kind of caught up in the crowd, if you will, that day, that just kind of wandered in and then ended up getting arrested, and all they did was wander in. So those folks essentially didn't do anything. There were some bad actors, but most of the people were just caught in the moment. Or what do you think there?
A couple of responses to that. First of all, I don't really buy the but. You know, there were some bad actors, but.
Yes.
Because these bad actors attacked police officers.
Yes.
And so they were really bad.
Bad.
And they were pardoned. And so I think you have to first start with that. A lot of the other people that were pardoned weren't in jail, had already served their times, because they were found only guilty of pretty minor things. But what I would mostly point to is I wouldn't ask whether they were innocent or guilty. I would ask whether they had due process or not. And every one of them did. Every one of them had an indictment from a grand jury. Every one of them had either a trial with a jury or they pleaded. And they pleaded because that's what they wanted to do. And if you plead, then you're acknowledging your guilt. So I don't really buy the idea that they didn't, that these were innocent people just swept up by Joe Biden and tossed into this hellhole of a jail in D.C. They had due process. They committed their crimes in D.C. That's what happens to you. But I think releasing them was a very dangerous thing to do. And it conveyed a disrespect for the rule of law that I think you see in a lot of actions. And this is something that you do worry about with authoritarians. I'll tell you the other thing that I really worry about is the fact that there are so limited checks on the people around him in the cabinet that he didn't appoint, you know, the most qualified people. Last time he had people around who could stand up to him because they were highly qualified people, and they had a certain kind of gravitas in their own right, Bill Barr. All right? People in the counsel's office. People in the Defense Department. But consider what he did. You know, he got rid of all the JAGs, so he eliminated this whole sort of legal level of the military. Hegseth was the most qualified person out there, or he was just simply loyal. You know, Matt Gaetz was an original nominee, and even Pat Bondi. You know, the best person you could find for the gravitas to stand up to him in the way that attorney generals have traditionally stood up to presidents? I don't think so. So that part of it concerns me, too, because something that authoritarian-oriented leaders tend to do is put sort of incompetent but highly loyal people around them. And I think we're seeing a lot of that.
Okay. I mean, for the January 6th thing, I'll disagree with you ever so slightly. If I'm a regular Joe and I went to that gig and I got caught up in the crowd and there I am and I get arrested and all I did was show up, you know, I didn't do anything, and here's this massive federal government taking me on, I'm thinking, I'm overwhelmed, of course I'm going to plead. There's no way I'm going to fight this, so I lose.
You see, I just don't. I have a hard time figuring out how somebody walks into the Capitol behind a fog of tear gas, right, from the people at the front, with people lying on the ground, and think, I'm allowed in. This is okay. I just don't buy it. I think they know they were doing something wrong, maybe not that wrong, but something wrong, and some of them were doing a lot wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, we'll just have to
All right.
disagree. Now, do I think we're an authoritarian country right now? No. The guardrails in the American system are very strong. We have a very powerful and strong court system that, you know, for the most part has actually stood up to the administration on a lot of issues. They lose more than they win. We also have other guardrails that I think are still holding. We still have guardrails in the states. We still have guardrails in the federal government. But you ask me if I think we're moving in that direction, and I think we're seeing a lot of dangerous patterns. Ask me after the next election, because I'm curious to see how that election goes.
Next year. The midterms. 26 midterms.
Yeah.
All right. Couple more minutes. Maybe part of this is, all right, you got Republicans, Democrats, an opinion. The Democrat Party at the top levels is a mess. It's a total mess. I mean, who's in charge? Here's an open-ended question. Who's in charge of that party? Is anybody in charge of that party? They just seem to be like meandering all over the place. And that could be a reason why Trump was able to go, go, go and get everything, or try to get everything he wants, because the other side is a mess. What do you think?
I think there could have been a much tighter strategy among Democrats in the Senate. But I don't know. I actually don't really buy into this idea quite the way other people do. There's never a leader of the out party until they have a nominee for the next election. And so we're years away from that. We have leaders in Congress. There are leaders in the state. There are people vying to be the national leader in the next election. But the idea that there's this single person out there that can grab control of the media narrative in a way that they're the spokesperson for the Democratic Party, it just doesn't make any sense to me. In fact, this is what happens when parties lose. They always go into a period of trying to figure out what the heck just happened and what are we going to do in the next election. So, you know, I think that in the Senate, they clearly could have held up some of these nominees, perhaps, and made some trouble, but they're the minority party. And it's hard when you're the minority party to have much ability to do anything.
All right.
So I just don't know how the Democrats would be able to do that.
Now, Trump obviously is the guy on the right, but he's been on the guy on the right for a long time, really.
Yeah.
There's been no person on the left. Kamala Harris was not that person.
No, oh, well, we've talked about this before. I think they made a huge mistake by not having Joe Biden drop out earlier. so that they could have had a primary process or some kind of process to, I thought that was a big problem. I'm not sure they would have won anyway, because I still think the economy and inflation really just pulled Biden down. It'd be hard for anybody to separate from them, but, you know, we're past that.
All right. Last question. Mm-hmm. Josh Shapiro's our governor. Mm-hmm. That bizarre arson that happened at the governor's mansion almost 2 weeks ago now. Just weird. I've driven past the mansion right on Front Street, right along the river. And so I was able, I didn't stop, but I'm driving along and I can see the damage and so on. Shapiro's supposed to be one of the big wigs, if you will, on the Democrat side, maybe for president here in a couple of years. Just a bizarre thought I had yesterday. That mansion fire helped his national aspirations because somebody, if you will, attacked him, which is what happened. And, you know, what has transpired since then? Could something as I'm thinking about Trump and Butler when that kid, whatever, took a shot at him. I mean, Trump's boom, up they went. Up his numbers went. Oh, my gosh. Shapiro, somebody tried to burn his house down, essentially. That helps his national aspirations. Is that good or am I crazy? What do you think?
Well, what I mostly think about with this is Reagan in 1981. And, you know, he gets shot.
Yeah.
His popularity numbers just soar. And Tip O'Neill just capitulates on this massive tax cut, saying this guy is so popular that I can't possibly stand in the way. And that was very consequential and a direct result of his getting shot. But I think that for Reagan, I think that for Trump, and maybe we're seeing it for Shapiro, but that election is so far away, I don't know. But it's how they handle themselves, I think, afterwards that makes a difference. You know, Trump standing up and raising his arm and all of that. That was a powerful image. Reagan making jokes to the operating in the operating room and those coming out, that was powerful. And, you know, and I think Shapiro's handled himself with grace and strength. And, of course, it gives a media focus to him. So you're thinking about him because now the camera's on him. You know, but that election, that's a long way. Until the midterms, we don't have any idea who's going to be the presidential candidate.
All right. It's all about the optics. The optics is a lot of politics, isn't
yes, it?
Just the way you perceive and see something.
Yeah, nobody knows that better than the Trump administration. They are focused on optics. I mean, look at all the optics they're putting out around deportation. There's almost an entire theater around their deportation moves.
And he comes out and talks essentially every day, where Joe Biden, you never heard from him for weeks.
Yes.
Optics.
I think it's more than optics. I think it's attention. I think that Trump believes in a kind of theory of politics that says that so long as I'm getting the attention, I'm doing okay. It doesn't even matter. I think he just says crazy stuff sometimes that just so that the attention the attention will be on him that day. And he gets to dominate. Nobody else. As you're talking about a Democrat, mm-hmm. How can any Democrat crack through that, given the attention on the permanent press corps in the White House, all of that? It's, until the election, it's just not even possible.
All right. Appreciate your time. Always have great conversations with you. There's just some we disagree on some things, but cool stuff.
Yeah.
Well, have fun with finals. Do you have fun with finals, or is that not possible?
I do enjoy looking forward to golf season.
Summer break. That's what you want. All right. Thanks again.
All right.
We'll have you again. Thanks again. Dr. Michael Berkman from Penn State, talking politics and just having a good conversation, you know, back and forth and so on. Not everything has to be an argument. It just doesn't. All right. All right. We're going to take a break. Now, our last segment is going to be really short, like 2 minutes or so. So we'll do a wrap up. And hey, don't you go anywhere. No. All right. We've got some more great stuff here on Let's Talk. You're listening to 98.7 The Fox on a gorgeous, beautiful Wednesday. Get out and enjoy it, and we'll come right back.
The Fox. This is The Fox. Get the feeling. Whoa. This is The Fox.
Let Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox make you a winner this summer with our Summer Splash Contest with Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. This Father's Day weekend, the Fox will be giving away a spacious hot springs hot tub during the Belfont Cruise at Talleyrand Park in downtown Belfont. Stop by these fine locations and get signed up to become a qualifier for the contest. Pimp, located 136 South Harrison Road in Pleasant Gap and at Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. No purchase necessary.
The 36th Annual Historic Belfont Cruise coming up Father's Day weekend, June 13th and 14th. Top-notch entertainment all weekend long. It starts out Friday night with an open cruise, a sock-off, the big car show on Saturday with over 30-plus classes of cars, trucks, and motorcycles on display. Plenty of sponsorship opportunities for you. Call 814-280-5881 or visit BelfontCruise.org. That's 814-280-5881 or BelfontCruise.org. The 36th Annual Historic Belfont Cruise, Father's Day weekend, June 13th and 14th.
Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox is where you will hear Paul Skeens pitch.
Swing and a miss, another strikeout for Skeens. That's four through two innings. Six up, six down for Paul Skeens.
And this is where you can learn that Key Brian Hayes is one of the best defensive players in Major League Baseball.
Bunted toward Berucki, now to third. Hayes, bare hands, throws, and got him! Terrific play by Key Brian Hayes! Magnificent!
Or perhaps you're just wondering, how do you answer?
Swing, fly ball, deep right field, closes in a grand slam! That's how you answer! That's how you answer!
Stay tuned for more Pirates baseball all summer long, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. And hopefully you remember how to properly use your Jolly Roger.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
Get ready, Center County. Clearwater Pool and Spa is turning up the heat at this year's Belfont Cruise on June 13th and 14th with an incredible giveaway. We're giving one lucky winner a walk-in 735L hot tub by Hot Springs. This six-person luxury spa is designed for the ultimate relaxation experience. Featuring powerful massage jets for deep hydrotherapy, multi-zone LED lighting to set the perfect mood, energy-efficient smart jet technology to keep costs low, and of course, the trusted quality of Hot Springs Spas, the industry leader in comfort and innovation. Want to enter? Stop by Clearwater Pool and Spa in Center Hall before the event or visit our booth at the Belfont Cruise on June 13th and 14th to sign up. Don't miss your chance to take home this premium hot spring hot tub. Make sure to check us out online at groupclearwater.com or visit us in person at our Center Hall location where you can browse our full lineup of hot spring spas. And while you're there, be sure to ask about our Imagine Pools and our selection of fiberglass pools by Ocean Reef. Win big this summer with Clearwater Swimming Pool Company and the Belfont Cruise.
Recent changes to analog phone lines have increased faxing costs dramatically. With Cloud Fax Solutions from Doing Better Business, you can now have a reliable, scalable method, which is great for compliance. XM Fax integrates seamlessly with our Ricoh and all multifunctional devices and provides a secure, shared experience with automatic workflow routing. Take your faxing to the cloud with Doing Better Business. Our solutions and service teams are ranked in the top 10% of the country for customer satisfaction. Visit us today at doingbetterbusiness.com.
All right, folks, we're done. We've had some folks actually trying to call in during the break. I mean, I literally have about a minute. That's about all we've got left. So we're going to put this one to sleep, so to speak, if you will. All right, so we'll have some open line time tomorrow. Also, Dave Gerdes from Happy Valley Adventure Bureau is going to join us tomorrow. Cool things coming up in the neighborhood this spring and summer. And, you know, is all this craziness, if you will, somehow affecting tourism? Possibly. I don't know, grant money and all that sort of stuff, wherever all that comes from. So we'll be talking with Dave tomorrow, and we'll have some open line time. And we have an open line program for all of Friday. And then our friend the Ironhead is supposed to be back on Monday. He's headed to Florida today. Dang, where do I sign up for this vacation plan? Hey, boss, where do I get this vacation? All right, we're going to work on that. Friends, it is a gorgeous day. Please get out and enjoy it today, besides like your lawn work and so on. Have a terrific Wednesday. We'll talk to you here again tomorrow morning.